Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Hello, dear Blood River Radio family. We're back for the third hour. And like we said earlier, we got the still bitter, more bitter than ever bitter ender, Gene Andrews, coming back on. I talked to Gene earlier today. We're going to do, Gene's going to do a little bit different. Like I told him, as far as I'm concerned, as far as Blood River is concerned, the third hour is sacrosanct. I mean, it's like the Washington Monument or something. It's like what is that place in North Dakota where the presidents are? The third hour will always be the professor, the behind-the-scenes warrior, Gene Andrews' hour. So I think he wants to do something different tonight. We're going to talk about some gruesome stuff, but it needs to be talked about. But anyway, how you doing, Bitter Ender?
I'm doing fine. We got the electricity back on in Nasty Bird. And finally, after the local yokels couldn't figure out which end of the plug to stick in the wall. So it was a mess. Sunday, a week ago, 5:02 in the morning, our power went out, and it didn't come on until the next Friday. And these people got more excuses than an Edsel salesman about why they couldn't do it. Oh, it was the worst thing ever, and it caught us off guard. Don't give me that horse manure. The weather babes were talking for 3 or 4 days, and they had their little different color map of the United States, and they saw this purple line, I mean, this pink line going across southern Tennessee, northern Alabama. Now, this will be rain and ice. And then they had a light blue line. Now, this is snow and ice. And then the dark blue up here in Kentucky will be the heavy snow. So they were talking about it for a week. And then our local yokel officials couldn't figure out what to do to get ready for all this mess coming through. And they've been revealing all the dirty little secrets that Nashville government, the Metro Council, which we have too many of. We've got 40 people on the Metro Council and 5 council people at large. And the state of Tennessee said you don't need that many for a town the size of Nashville. They're going to cut it back to 20. But anyway, so they came up with this brilliant idea to stop cutting trees along the roads that were hanging over the power lines and take that money and hire a DEI woman to run Nashville Electric Service, which didn't know of electric wire from a wire coat hanger. And so had no clue of what was going on when all this stuff hit the fan. And so, oh gosh, it's just so frustrating to have to put up with this nonsense. But anyway, we tried it for a first day or so, just burning wood in the fireplace. And the hard part about that is you can't sleep because about every hour you have to throw more wood on the fire at night. So it's hard to get any sleep at night. And you have to sit really close to the fireplace. It heat doesn't go out that far. So after about 2 days of that, and then they were predicting the next night was going to be 1 degree. So we bailed out, and our daughter came over and picked us up and took us over to their house. They had a generator, and it took care of the refrigerator and the microwave and lights and a couple of small heaters. So we survived and did that, and I'd run out and get gas for the generator. I will say one thing for the local yokel government. They did a good job of clearing off the streets. And so you could get out and get food and get groceries. And it was funny. My son lives up in Madison, which is the northern part of Nashville suburb. And their power came on first before ours did down here in the southern part of the county. So my daughter said, well, we're sending Meemaw and Peemaw up to Madison. You got them. And Scott says, no returns. So Katie sent them that picture, first part of the Beverly Hillbillies where all the clampets are packed in that old truck and Granny's in that rocking chair up on top of it. And she said, oh, yes, we're sending the clampets up to you now that you've got power. So we had some fun making fun of all the mess that we had to go through. But anyway, we got it back, so we're back in business. Now, we were talking about this earlier in the week. We try to keep our third hour, our Confederate hour, current with what happened in history during that month. And last week, we talked about two great, great Confederate officers and leaders and fine Christians that were born in January. Robert E. Lee on January 19th, and then in 1807, and then Thomas Jackson, Stonewall Jackson, who was born in January also on the 21st in 1824. And their career in the U.S. military, and then when their state seceded, they, of course, went with their state and what happened to them. And then we ran a little short because we turned over our first segment to Monica, which is great. I mean, she had a great guest on, and they did a super job, so I won't ever complain about any of the people from the first hour or two taking part of the third hour. They did a really good job. And then we just had the part on Lee and Jackson, and we were going to talk about, and we'd talked about this, having January as murder month, and talk about the murders that blacks have inflicted on whites, and like we have June as the USS Liberty month, and talk about the slimy Israelis and their dirty deal of trying to sink the USS Liberty in the Mediterranean, send it to the bottom and take 249 American sailors and Marines down, just wipe them out. And so there were no witnesses and nobody left. And then they were going to say that Egypt had attacked the ship and drag us into a war with the Israelis against Egypt. Well, of course, they couldn't sink the ship. They did a lot of damage. They killed 34 of our sailors. And the thing got out of there and limped back into port. And then our double-crossing government said anybody that talks about this is going to be court-martialed. And they, of course, they split up the crew and sent them to duty stations all over the world where and they couldn't get two people together from the Liberty crew and say, well, what'd you see? I saw this. I don't know. What'd you see? And so anyway, it was a dirty deal by the Israelis. It was a dirty deal by Lyon Lyndon Johnson, Robert McNamara, and John McCain Sr., who was head of the Department of the Navy, or some big high-ranking Navy official, to cover all this up. So that was June. So we're going to talk about the murder month of January. And we're going to talk about two really horrific murders of young white people by blacks that took place in the month of January. And, of course, we get shoved down our throats MLK Day, which basically stands for Murder, Looting, and Killing Day. And the really irritating thing about that is that took over Robert E. Lee's birthday on the 19th. We lost that holiday, and they gave us a federally mandated holiday for the plagiarizing, whore-chasing communist jailbird, MLK. And we lost that. And we used to have three Confederate holidays in Tennessee, Robert E. Lee on the 19th, Jefferson Davis on June the 3rd, and Bedford Forrest on July the 13th. We have none of those left anymore. And we get Gay Pride Month, we get Hispanic Month, we get all this other horse manure dumped on us, but we can't have our Confederate events anymore. So, back to our original premise of January is Murder Month. One of them I was wanted to talk about was the murder of Michael Westerman. And this occurred on January 14th, 1985. He and his wife, young wife, the young people, were living in Guthrie, Kentucky, and they just had twin girls that were born. And they got a chance for the mother-in-law to take care of the babies, and they were going to go down to Clarksville, Tennessee, cross the state line to Clarksville, closest city of any size, and have a night out and enjoy, you know, getting the night out together. And he stopped at a convenience store in Guthrie to go in and get something, came back out, and these carload of blacks from Chicago pulled up beside him and started to give him a lot of grief because he had a Confederate flag on the back of his pickup truck. And so they followed them out of that convenience store down the road headed towards Tennessee. And just about the time they crossed the state line into Robertson County, as a northern county in Tennessee, they pulled around to the driver's side, even with the truck, and opened fire. And the bullet went through the door and hit Michael in the back, and he slumped over the wheel. And his wife, Hannah, grabbed the wheel and kept the car from going off in a ditch, the truck the pickup truck from going off in a ditch and flipping over. And they opened fire on her. They were trying to kill her, too, because they didn't want a witness. And so she got the truck off the road and got it turned around in the parking lot of a feedlot and got back to Guthrie and got to the hospital there. And they were going to fly him by helicopter down to Vanderbilt in Nashville, which has a level one trauma unit. But it was nighttime, and it was dark, and it had been storming, and it was overcast, and it was too cloudy for the helicopter to fly, so they had to put him in an ambulance and take him down there. But anyway, by the time he got down there, he had died. They couldn't get him into
a quick break.
The trauma unit. Yeah. We'll finish up the story after we come back.
Yeah, I can't wait. We need to hear that every year. Be right back, people.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Oh, Blood River Radio Pam. We're going to go back without wasting another second. We're going to go back to the Michael Westerman murder of 1985 with none other but the Bitter Ender covering it. He was had a large part of it. But go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Yeah, this took place, like we were talking about, in January of 1985. The young man, Michael Westerman, from Guthrie, Kentucky. He and his wife were going out. First time they had a chance to go out since their two twin daughters were born, and they felt they were old enough that their mother-in-law could take care of them. They went out just for dinner, going down to Clarksville, Tennessee. And he pulled in a convenience store, and a carload of blacks pulled in there and started harassing him about having a Confederate flag on his pickup truck, followed him, got out on the road. They had just crossed the Tennessee state line into Robertson County, and the blacks pulled up even with him, shot through the door, hit Michael. They're trying to kill his wife because they didn't want any witnesses, but she dodged the bullets and got the car, or the truck rather, off the road into a parking lot for a feedlot, got it turned around, came back up to Guthrie, Kentucky, to the hospital there, and they didn't have a level one trauma unit to take care of a gunshot wound like that. They were going to try to life flight him down to Vanderbilt in Nashville, which is a trauma one unit. But it was so overcast, they couldn't get a helicopter in the air, so they had to take him by ambulance. And by the time they got him down there, it was too late, and he had passed away. So here's a widowed young lady and two infant girl daughters that are left because of a carload of murdering savage animals just decided to shoot somebody because they didn't agree with the flag he had on his truck. And then Later on that year, in March of 1985, Bill Rowland from Memphis helped organize a memorial service for Michael at the cemetery where he was buried in Guthrie. And golly, there were probably 300 to 400 people that were there. And we organized a caravan to leave Nashville and come up north there up to the cemetery at Guthrie, and had a very somber, very excellent memorial service. And then went over to Fairview, Kentucky, a little further west, where the Jefferson Davis Monument is. And that's where Jefferson Davis was born, in that portion of Kentucky there. And they have that tall monument there. It looks almost as tall, and it looks just like the Washington Monument in D.C. And we had a memorial service there for him. And Samuel Francis, the syndicated columnist, was one of the speakers there. In fact, I got a letter from him and thanking me for helping organize it. Yeah, but Bill was the main person to organize it. And we got it's just really disgusting how cowardly the Sons of Confederate Veterans have become. The fellow that was the national commander then told us we shouldn't do it. It would look bad for the SCV. I said, you know, the SCV is supposed to defend our Confederate heroes and martyrs, and somebody getting killed with a Confederate flag, if that's not a Southern martyr, I don't know what is. So we went ahead and did it anyway, and didn't have the official blessing of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, but that was all right. And we had, you know, several hundred people at the speeches that were given there at the Jefferson Davis Monument. And then later on that year was the trial, and I'll have to go back and look at the dates for sure. But I had met the Westerman family, his mother and father, just, you know, really super nice people, just ordinary middle-class working people. And they appreciated that the support that individual Sons of Confederate Veterans camps had given them, not the national, but local camps, and to try to support the family and whatever we could do for them. And that they asked me to be at the trial with them because they didn't trust, you know, what the blacks were going to do there. They may have to start having a big shoot up at the courthouse. And it was in Springfield, Tennessee, which is the county seat of Robertson County, which is the county where the crime actually took place. They came across the Tennessee state line chasing this boy and actually shot him in Robertson County in Tennessee. So that's why the trial was there, not back up in Kentucky. So there was no question about what had happened, but the defense attorney for these thugs gave us this just really ridiculous defense. Said, well, it was a tragedy, but, you know, the thing was just like a high school prank that went bad. And I'm thinking, I've never heard anybody getting shot in a high school prank. It seems like it was a little more serious than a high school prank. And then they did find him guilty. I think there were two life sentences, and one of the others that was involved in the car, the shooter, had life in prison. And they requested a judge trial, and they said they couldn't get a fair trial with a jury. It'd be too prejudiced around there. So a jury trial would have probably sentenced them to lethal injection to get rid of it. So they had a judge trial, and they wound up, one of them got a life sentence, and one was like 40 years and something like that. None of them got off. And then the FBI got involved in it. And not to investigate and not to prosecute these thugs and criminals, but somebody during that time had made a wooden cross out of tubifores and burned it close to the side of the road. So the FBI was called in to find out who had burned this cross and done the terrible thing like that. And it just opened my eyes to how rotten and worthless the federal government is. They were more concerned with two burnt 2x4s than they were about the life of a young Southern white boy. So it just shows you, you know, what our federal government is, their main interest is to prosecute anybody in the South that has any conservative ideas or anything. So anyway, that was Michael Westerman and what happened there. They had asked, like I said, they'd asked me to be at the trial. And of course, when a day's trial or the day's session was over, all these blacks were packed out in the lobby of the courthouse, and they were shouting all this garbage at the Mr. and Ms. Westerman. And
my God.
So I just walked with them, and just when they'd try to step up, I played enough hockey, you know, how to use a forearm shiver and just kind of knock them out of the way so they could get out of the building and get to their car. And then there was some goofball reporter, national reporter, that kept harassing me for about a block or two as I was walking down to where I was going to park my car, where I had parked my car. And his story was that, oh, you know, it was terrible, but he was flying a Confederate flag. And all the news stories, the Nashville papers and anything that went out nationally, they saw, oh, it was so terrible, this young man got killed, but they always had that but in there. He was flying a Confederate flag, and what can you expect with something like that? So this guy was giving me grief about that, and I told him, if you don't leave me alone and get out of my face, there's going to be a second murder trial, but you won't be around to hear anything about it. So he finally got the hint and left me alone. But that was the thing that was so much disgusting about it, was that the local news and the national, well, national news never picked it up. It was just no local news, and every once in a while they'd have some national reporter come by and do a story that would, you know, kind of try to make excuses for the shooters. And they would always, you know, oh, it's so terrible, this man got killed, and he is a father, and he had two infant twin girls. But, and then they'd go on with their rant about the Confederate flag. So, the Westermans, super nice people, his mom and dad, we tried to help them, you know, give them support, whatever we could do. They gave the flag that was flying to that on that truck to Ronnie Mangrum, SCV member in Franklin, that he'd gone up there and helped him.
Oh.
And then about 2 years ago, Ronnie gave us, had that flag framed, and it had a picture of Michael and a picture of his pickup truck, and framed it. And he gave, about 2 years ago, he gave it to the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home there in Chapel Hill.
Wow.
We have it framed and up on the wall there with a plaque telling everybody where that came from.
God.
So we're very proud of that for a Southern martyr that was murdered because of his Southern patriotism. The other one that we wanted to talk about was what has been referred to as the Knoxville Massacre. And that was another January killing. That took place in January 6th of 2007 in Knoxville, Tennessee, home for the University of Tennessee. There was a young couple, a young lady, Shannon Christensen, and her boyfriend, Christopher Newsom. They were going out to dinner, and four blacks attacked them, kidnapped them, got carjacked them, and took them over into the black part of Knoxville. And they tortured them for 3 days. They raped and sodomized them. They tortured them just unbelievably. I cannot imagine how somebody could live through this for 3 days. And Christopher, they tied his hands behind his back, tied his feet together, shot him in the back of the head, two or three shots, dumped him on a railroad track, poured gasoline on him, and set his body on fire. And Shannon was even worse as being a woman and being raped repeatedly by these black animals. And then one of them even dumped Drano down her throat to get rid of his DNA. And finally, she was suffocated. They put a trash bag over her head, and she finally died from that. Now, the Knoxville police, some friends of theirs said that they hadn't seen him, and they didn't know what happened to him that night. And they wanted the police to see if they could do some investigation and find out what happened. Police told them, oh, no, we have a certain amount of time. We have to wait for a missing person. So we'll get back and finish up this story in a little bit.
I'm so glad you're covering this, Shane. Be right back, people.
You're listening.
listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. The desperate search continues for the 84-year-old kidnapped mother of today's show host, Savannah Guthrie.
The Arizona sheriff investigating the kidnapping of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie's mother, Nancy, told the AP Friday he has concerns about the 84-year-old's health as her family waits for proof of life.
Her conditions, I would imagine, are worsening day by day. She requires medication, and I have no way of knowing whether they're getting that medication to her.
She's said to have a pacemaker, high blood pressure, and heart issues. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. and Russian negotiators have discussed their expired nuclear pact.
The START Treaty, dating back to the Cold War, expired this week, leaving no caps on the two largest atomic arsenals for the first time in decades. The lack of an agreement has fueled fears of an unconstrained nuclear arms race. President Trump says he wants a modernized pact instead of extending the old one, which he claims was badly negotiated by the United States. And he wants China to be a part of a new agreement, again accusing Beijing of covert nuclear tests. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Senator Tom Cotton says it makes little sense for Democrats to hold up funding for the Department of Homeland Security over their opposition to ICE immigration enforcement efforts. For one thing, he says ICE has already been fully funded.
Well, you would see a degradation of service in is the TSA at airports as we're trying to get back on our feet after a massive winter storm, or the Coast Guard or FEMA as people are struggling after this massive winter storm, or our cybersecurity efforts. Those would all be shut down if the Democrats refused to fund DHS on even a short-term basis.
Senator Cotton made his comments to the Salem Radio Network. Amazon sales surged 14% during the fourth quarter. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Whether you're preparing for exams, juggling family and career, or just looking to stay sharp as you age, Think Factor is here to help. Created by the same company that makes Relief Factor, Think Factor supports sharper focus, stronger recall, and clearer thinking. It's the natural way to give your brain the daily nutrients it needs for memory, attention, and even vibrant vision. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com to learn more. Look, I was a little bit skeptical. I started taking Think Factor. After a few weeks, wow, my memory, my focus, my concentration, better than ever. And Think Factor results get better the longer it's taken. If you want to stay focused during demanding tasks, keep your memory strong, maintain mental energy for whatever's ahead, well, Think Factor is for you. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com to learn more and order Think Factor. Your first bottle is just $19.95. Think Factor. Think clearer, perform better daily. Call 800-4-RELIEF. Or visit ReliefFactor.com for Think Factor.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I want to thank Gene so much. He's doing an excellent job on covering this murder month. Our people need to know about that. I know I'm just going to go back on one thing he said, and I said told it to Gene during the break. To me, it's just incomprehensible. It's stupid. It makes no sense. It shows the complete degradation and the utter hatred that our society has for white people, especially white Southerners. It is double especially for white Southern white people, white Southern Christians, that the FBI would come down and concern themselves about two damn pieces of wood that had been burnt in the midst of this horrible murder that these feral animals committed on those kids up there in Kentucky driving a pickup truck. And the way they did those white people in Knoxville, and for it to be just downgraded, I don't even know how to say anything about that, but I'm so glad you're covering that, Gene. Our people know about that. And Gene, you were talking about taking to back you up that you're not exaggerating. Matter of fact, Gene's right. He's downplaying it some. You can go and tell them about how they get the details of that, Gene, like you told
okay,
me.
Okay, if our listeners want to find out more details on this and get some really, want to see the gruesome details, we can kind of clean this up a little bit for broadcast. But just go online and type in Knoxville Massacre, January 2007. Knoxville Massacre, and that's the headline of it, January 2007. And you can read all the horrible details of what happened to Shannon Christensen and Christopher Newsom when they were captured and held hostage and tortured and raped and sodomized and shot and murdered and burned and suffocated and all the things they went through. And, you know, I was reading that and I was thinking to myself, what would I have done in that kind of situation? Helpless. You know, if I knew it was coming, Mr. Wesson would have come out from under the front seat and I could have gotten six of them before they got into my truck. But, you know, young kids like that, they didn't think anything about it. They were just going out on a date in Knoxville, college town. They thought they were safe. And these animals kidnapped them and carjacked them, took their car and drove them over into the black part of town in this house in the slums and had them there for 3 days, just torturing them unbelievably. And I thought, I think I would have prayed to God to let me die. Just yes, get it yes. over with. Let me die, please. That's all
you
I'm asking.
Did.
I'm not asking for a miracle for the Marines to come in here and save me. Yeah. Just let me die and get it over with. Golly, day, I cannot imagine going through something like that.
You know, Gene,
yeah.
Our people, our white people, the average white person could never think that could happen. They couldn't. I don't think the average white person, especially young people that have been brainwashed in school, could ever imagine anything resembling a humanoid could be so incredibly evil and callous just to do what they did to those kids in Knoxville. They probably just can't imagine that happening, Gene. I'm not even a damn.
Well, they've been so brainwashed, Eddie. That's the problem. They're told that if we mention something like this, we're racist, we're terrible, horrible people, you know, white supremacist, all this kind of garbage like that. And they don't want to be classified in that, so they just shut up and, you know, go about their merry way and think, well, I hope it doesn't happen to me, but I can't say anything about it. So, you know, you have to go to other news sources like Blood River Radio. It's going to bring the truth out there. And the hypocrisy of the whole thing, the news coverage, how they covered it, deliberately covered it up. deliberately. I mean, they had the facts. There was no doubt about that. They had the facts. And but the news media in Knoxville and, of course, the national news, they never mentioned it at all. But the news media in Knoxville tried to cover it up. And the really scary thing to me was my daughter was a student at the University of Tennessee when this happened. And she was a freshman up there when all this was going on. And she said, I asked her about it, and she said, oh, yeah, they had something on the local news, but it wasn't on but, you know, one time, and that was one TV report and one thing in the newspaper, and that was it. After that, boy, they shut it off and didn't say anything else about it. So that's, you know, a total damnation of the news media for covering something up like that. And then you mentioned during the break that this drug addict, George Floyd, that story was on night after night after night after night after night. There were riots. They, you know, the screwballs in Minneapolis, not doing anything now except attacking the ICE agents. They did nothing to stop the riots. They destroyed downtown Minneapolis, burning everything down. But that was okay. That was okay. You know, he'd been killed by this evil white cop, which he hadn't. He died of a drug overdose. And that was the first coroner's report that he had died of a drug overdose. And he said, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And they said, well, when you're dying of a drug overdose, that's the first thing that happens. Your respiratory system shuts down. And of course he couldn't breathe because he was dying from a drug overdose. And he could have had an elephant standing on his neck. It wouldn't have made any difference because he's going to die of a drug overdose. And so then they blamed it on this cop, and it came out with a second coroner's report that said, well, he died of trauma from the police officer putting his knee on his neck. But he put it on the side of his neck. And you get somebody, you lay down and let them stand on the side of your neck, and you can keep talking. You can whistle Dixie. You can do whatever you want to on the side of your neck. Now, yeah. If that officer put his knee on the front of his neck and crushed his windpipe, yeah, but he didn't. And that's what they were taught to do. You got a criminal element, a drug head there, a violent person you're trying to apprehend. There's only one. You got to get them down and get the cuffs on them. And that's one way to do it. Get them on the ground, and somebody's got to hold their hands, and he's trying to hold him down and put his knee on the side of his neck. And I would challenge all of our listeners, get a friend of yours, lay down on the floor and let them put their knee on the side of your neck, because you can still keep talking. It's not going to bother you one bit. But, you know, they needed a story, and the news media created a story, and it was a white attacking a poor black, and so that's the story they wanted. Now, you turn it around, and these two young white girl and young white boy in Knoxville were tortured and just horribly treated for 3 days, raped, sodomized, and finally killed, mercifully killed. I don't know if they could have lived much longer what they were going through. And the news media covered it up. So that just shows you how rotten the news media are and why so many people don't trust the mainstream media. They go to podcasts, they go to other conservative newspapers and things like that, like the Sovereign, like the American Free Press, anything to get the truth that they're not going to get from the so-called mainstream media. Well, anyway, going back to that, we talked about how this was covered up, what had happened to him, the trial there in Knoxville for these subhuman animals. Finally drew some attention, and there were a lot of whites that went there to protest, and the whites that protested were arrested, and they weren't blocking traffic. They weren't out in the middle of the street. The police arrested white people who were protesting at this trial about what had happened and asking for the death penalty. So the police arrested them, and they, like I said, they were on the sidewalk. They were not. They weren't blocking the sidewalk. They were just out about in front of the courthouse there in Knoxville, Knox County, and they weren't blocking the sidewalk. They weren't keeping people from walking up and down there. They weren't blocking traffic on the street, but the police arrested them for just being outside and having signs about these animals and what they had done to this young couple. So you know, we can talk about how rotten the mainstream media is. Our government is not a whole lot better in the way they treat these situations. And I've had people throw this in my face and say, well, you can't blame all the blacks for being like that. And I said, well, no, you can't. There are some good ones. But if you're out in the woods and you come up on a crevice in a rock and you hear rattlesnakes in there and you figure there are about 10 of them, you don't stick your hand down in that crevice and go, oh, my gosh, 8 rattlesnakes bit me. Oh, but there were 2 of them that didn't bite me. So that means rattlesnakes aren't all bad. So you don't stick your hand in a nest of rattlesnakes and say, well, maybe 1 or 2 of them won't bite me. You stay away from them. So this is the situation that we're facing today, and I don't see it, you know, really getting a whole lot better. There's so many liberal judges out there that want to make excuses for this criminal activity. And even when you try to get a lot of these really hard criminals out of the country, then that stirs up a lot of protest. Okay.
Yes.
We'll come back for the last segment.
Yes. Be right back, people. I'll briefly mention my sister-in-law, how she got murdered by a feral black animal when we come back.
Step into the boots of the American West with Range Magazine, where grit meets grace. This is a front row seat to the stories, struggles, and triumphs of ranchers, farmers, and stewards of the land. From jaw-dropping photography to no-nonsense reporting, Range brings you the untold tales of life on the range. Whether you're a city dweller with a cowboy's heart or living life where the pavement ends, Range speaks to the soul of the West. Subscribe today at rangemagazine.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
Dear Blood River Radio family, this is really a gruesome episode, but our people need to know just how dangerous these feral blacks are. I'll make a quick story. In January, I think it was 1993, my sister-in-law, my daughter, my wife's sister, she was at ATMs. We've warned her many times to stay away from those ATMs. She was her husband went psycho or something, left her. She was raising a preteen boy. She went in. She drew out her last $20 out of the ATM machine so the kid could have lunch at school, et cetera, et cetera. And a feral black came and stole her $20 bill. The film shows it. He left briefly, and he came back like an afterthought. It came back totally unnecessary and shot a gene just in the upper lobe of her lung, and she was gurgling. The lady witness that came to help Jean said that she was still gurgling. She was grabbing her throat. She strangled to death on her own blood. The prosecutor told my wife and her family not to go for the death penalty. They probably couldn't get it, but they said he'd been convicted of life in prison with no opportunity for parole, so he's going to be away forever. the lousy feral animal, I don't even think he did 6 years, Gene, and he's out. Some Jew, liberal juice lawyer, the same old suspects, the men that wear tiny little hats, came and he got him out. He's walking the streets to this very day. Anyway, gosh. I just wanted to let our people know that that hit close to home of these feral blacks. And don't ever, think they're not feral. They are feral.
Yeah, that's when I heard about this going on in Knoxville. That's why I got so nervous, because my daughter was in school up there. And I thought, if they could do it to these two people, you know, what could they do to her and her friends that were going out at night? And this really wasn't a bad part of town. It was a part, you know, where they had a lot of restaurants and bars, kind of like, sort of like Lower Broadway in Nashville or Beale Street in Memphis or something like that, I guess, would be more the type of situation. But, you know, you can't go out at night. I mean, when the sun goes down, it's just open season on us. And that's why I carry that revolver with me wherever I go, in the truck. And I'm not going to go through certain parts of night of Nashville after the sun goes down. And that's a shame. You know, I was born and raised in Nashville. It used to be a nice town. And you could go pretty much anywhere you wanted to, day or night, and didn't have to fear for your life. Now, there are certain parts where the projects were. You wouldn't go roaring right down through the middle of those. But, you know, normal parts of downtown or out towards West End, going out towards Vanderbilt or Centennial Park or places like that, you weren't afraid to go out there. But boy, you sure didn't do it now. And I was just watching this morning on TV, just by circumstance, they had about four crime stories on of things that had happened in Nashville last night or the day before. Every single one of them was a black criminal that shot and killed somebody, or that had robbed somebody, or that had done something. And they were putting up these pictures, and I thought, good gosh almighty, the morning television looks like the starting lineup for an NBA basketball team, that the pictures they're putting up there. And that's what a friend of mine said: if it weren't for the blacks, we wouldn't have any local news in Nashville. There's so much black crime that they keep reporting, and at least they do report it. Now, they don't do much after that. You know, they just, so, you know, police are looking for this suspect, and they throw a picture up there. And shock, shock, shock. I can't believe it. It's a black person. It must be, you know, that's all the pictures the police had or something. Anyway, so that's the situation we live in, and we just have to, you know, you met Simon Roach from South Africa.
Yes.
And you just have to assume that we're living in a North American version of South Africa. That it was one of the most prosperous countries in the world, not just Africa, but in the world. And don't forget, that's where they had the first heart transplant, that doctor in South Africa.
Bedard Christian or Christian Bedard? I can never think which one. I think Bernard.
Christian,
yes,
Barnard. Did the first heart transplant. That was at a hospital in South Africa. They used to have a Formula One race there, because that was the first one, because when it
That's
was
right.
winter up here, it was summer down there. And I've always said, you know, Bernie Ecclestone doesn't put on a Formula One race unless there's a lot of money. And I mean a lot of money paid up front. But now, oh my gosh, the hospitals have all been destroyed because the blacks have, that African National Congress has taken over. And they go in and rip out all the copper plumbing in there to sell it, and so the hospitals are closed. And Simon said, you know, they have to get away from the cities and set up these compounds out in the countryside for whites to live, just to survive. It's not segregation, it's survival. And they have generators, and they have, in South Africa, they don't have rolling blackouts, they have rolling power, that the power won't be on all day. They just get a little bit of power a certain time during the day. So how could you have a restaurant with a freezer and have food to serve in a restaurant if you don't know when the power's coming on? And when it does, it's only going to be on for an hour or two and then cut off. So they pretty much have to figure out how to survive without any black overview or running any of the life saving facilities, the hospitals, the water purification plants, the electricity, anything like that. If you depend on them for that, you're just asking for trouble. You're going to starve to death or whatever is going to happen to you. So anyhow, oh, and that's one thing to bring that up. I noticed, you know, when we had all this ice and the trees were coming down and tearing down the power lines and knocking the poles down, I saw a lot of places in Nashville, these big trees hit these poles and snapped these poles off. So they had to get the trees cut up and then bring an auger in and drill holes and put up a brand new pole to run the lines on. But I noticed all these linemen out there, not one single black that I saw in all the ones they had out there. They had to have some people that knew what they were doing so they didn't get up there on a bucket truck and electrocute themselves and cause even more outages around Nashville. And that just kind of goes to prove when you need, you know, skilled workers, that's who you have to turn to. And DEI was one of the reasons why there was such a disaster in Nashville with this ice and loss of power situation. And we're going on 2 weeks, and they're still a small percentage, not as much as it was when it first hit. There's still people in parts of Nashville that still haven't gotten their electricity back yet. So that just goes to prove what happens when you can't use productive people, and the fools in the government think that you can just throw these affirmative action or diversity, equity, and inclusion clowns in there and everything's going to run smoothly. They may, when you just have somebody on the surface to say, oh, we're so... we're not race conscious. We hire all these people here and we give them a chance and yada, yada. Well, when a disaster hits, when the ship hits the sand, as they say, what's going to happen? And it kind of proved in Nashville what happened with all the power going down and extremely poor planning, just really poor planning. And you were in the military and I was too. And they always told us to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And
yes,
I know when we came back out of Vietnam, we were on Okinawa, the island of Okinawa, and they had a big typhoon come through. They call it a typhoon there. We call it a hurricane. But it hit the island. They shut down the base and kept everybody inside. But they had all this equipment parked in those big curved concrete revetments or bunkers or whatever you call it. So as soon as that hurricane crossed the island and went out into the South China Sea, there were marine engineers and the road crews and everybody, they were back out on the road clearing off the base first and restringing the power lines. And then they went out and started clearing off the roads for the Okinawans, going down to Ken Village and Namanui and Kadena and Naha and all the major cities there on the island of Okinawa. But they planned for it. And when you have people that are holding the job just because they're female or the color of their skin, and they can't plan for situations like that, you have disasters that come along. And that's kind of what Nashville got a wake-up call. And we all laughing about it, you know, once we got through the initial shock and said, yeah, we don't have any power, but we're building a dome stadium. They're going to have the Super Bowl here in 2029. So that's all that counts, as long as we got that. Everything else is fine. So what if they hit the Super Bowl in the third quarter, all the lights go out?
You know what?
Are they going to flip a coin to say who wins? So, anyway.
This is kind of a rabbit trail, but once upon a time when I was a kid, we used to have what they called the blind game. And I forgot, I think it was the Lions Club that sponsored the blind game in Memphis, Tennessee. And the runner-ups for the city championships have the Eastern Division and Western Division, the way they would play for the championship. I think the people came in second. They would play for the game, and it would benefit the blind. Believe it or not, This applies to what you're talking about, power going out. So at halftime, everybody would be issued, if you didn't have your matches, you could get ones in the stadium, so they would turn all the lights off, and everybody would strike a match, and it would light up pretty good around the stadium, and people would say we're trying to help fight blindness by lighting these matches.
Oh, yeah.
God, I hear that. I can't believe the music coming already, but I was going to say
Little
Leroy was being taught in school, Gene, by his school teacher, being taught English, a white English teacher, and a black little boy. She said, teaches in English grammar, what comes at the end of a sentence? And he said, parole? Anyway.
Well, we'll get back to our Confederate history next week, Eddie.
We will. Octavia, well, God bless you. Thank you for coming on this. We needed to do this. We certainly did. And I'm so glad you did it. And I know our Blood River Radio family is glad, too. But good night, June. Good night. You did a great job. Good night, Miss Teenage America. Thank you so much for running this board flawlessly. And I'm so glad to get back. Good night, all you Blood River Radio family. Same time, same place next week, God willing. Good night, everybody.